Hello, boys and ghouls. Welcome to episode 103 of Dads from the Crypt, Tales of the Crypt podcast. My name is Jason, hello, joined by Jody.
Welcome
hello.
To Dads
and Mundo.
From the Crypt. Hello.
Hello. How are y'all doing?
I'm here.
Yes.
I don't have my flashlight shut out this week, so I'm just gonna have to talk and stuff. I can't rely on theatrics.
I misheard your first question. Where the fuck is Jody?
I don't have that with me either. That's a weird way to record.
Yeah. whatever gets the motor running, as they say.
Well, I mean, so for those that might not have listened, that might not be listening to some of our horror anthology movies.
Shame on you, first of all.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we did one last week called Campfire Tales from 1997 or 8, whatever it was. And I've never even heard of this movie before, so I don't blame you if you didn't. But it's slightly mediocre movie, but I think we had a good, but I think we did a really good episode. We kind of threw up the format, or we just switched up the format a lot. Jody turned down the lights and brought the flashlight. We told some spooky stories and brought some ambiance. We had Elizabeth Kyle on, and she did a little, she glammed up for a little cosplay. That was really fun. And Jody's daughter Elise was on there, so yeah, we all had a good time.
It was a fun time.
Yeah, give Elise my regards, because she is now officially the scariest martial artist that's ever been on this podcast.
Yes.
Fucking international martial artist over there. I didn't get a chance. I was editing. I didn't get a chance to listen to the whole thing. What I heard is really, really fun, so it's cool having her on. So thank her for coming on for me.
Absolutely. She had a good time.
Good, good.
And I saw you took her to see Barbie.
Yeah. I took my three oldest to see Barbie the other day. I really like it. Like, I really like it. It's up there in my top movies of the year for sure.
So for someone, I'm probably not going to see it till it's on VOD, because I never grew up with my sister is 6 years older than me, so I never grew up with the whole Barbie fandom. And I don't have any, like, my daughter was never really into Barbies growing up. But I heard there's a lot to sink your teeth into for pretty much anyone that goes see it, unless you're just a misogynistic piece of shit.
Right.
I'm looking at you, Mr. Benjamin Shapiro. But I heard there's a lot for anybody can go and enjoy and sink their teeth into. And the reviews have been great that are coming out from it, which is really cool.
Yeah. No, I went in there with pretty high hopes, mainly because of Greta Gerwig being the director. And she and her partner were the writers of it too. So I like her. Cool. I like what she puts out there. And it's a really weird movie. Like, it's a lot weirder than I expected. Like, with the way that they have like these two worlds, they have the real world and the Barbie world, and the characters in the Barbie world move the way that they would if a kid was playing with them. Like, I was laughing. Huh. There's one scene. Like, all the Barbies are talking to each other, and they're just walking around going, "Hi, Barbie. Hi, Barbie. Hi, Ken. Hi, Ken. Hi, Barbie." And I'm thinking of, like, watching my daughter play, and it's just characters saying, "Hi, hi, 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 hi," right. You know? And it's really neat with that. And then there's a lot of messaging in there, too, about women and men and patriarchy and feminism. But it's not like this movie doesn't hate men. Like, you'd have to be a super fragile dude to walk out of there like, "This movie hates me." No,
that's pretty much how Ben Shapiro talks, like, all day long, imagine.
Oh, yeah, no, he made like a 45-minute video like,
"Ben Shapiro destroys the Barbie movie."
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's something a grown man needs to do, make a 45-minute video explaining why you didn't like the Barbie movie.
That's just like who's healthily mentally adjusted,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. But, you know, there was a lot of good stuff to sink your teeth into. Lots of good discussions with my kids later. Like, you know, the whole thing about the patriarchy there is it harms everybody, men and women. We all don't do better under that system. And, you know, it's kind of the whole, like, you can be who you want to be. And if you don't know who that is, that's cool, too. Like it's fine to not know who you want to be and to be on that journey of discovery. Like, I think there's something in there that I think most people could enjoy.
It's kind of interesting.
I might try to go see it this weekend.
It's like interesting because the people I see kind of rallying against it are the ones who, like, really need to take that message from the movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, always. And that's always how it works.
Yeah. And there are classic examples of people who are hurt by the patriarchy and by toxic masculinity because they can't watch a movie like this and pull something out of it. You know?
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that some men are afraid to walk into this movie shows how the patriarchy is bad for all of us. Like, we should be able to go watch a Barbie movie without being like, what if somebody sees me and challenges my masculinity?
Okay, it's fine, dude. Like, can I state, though, why I don't want to go see it alone? It's the same reason why I'm not going to go watch a Disney movie alone. So for some reason, I don't care if someone thinks of me. I just like, I equate Barbie with a children's movie. And I don't want someone to think I'm trying to steal their child when I'm there.
Yeah, no. I think as aware men, it complicates things for us sometimes where you're like, I'm just walking down the road. Oh, look, there's a lady walking down the road. I better not come across as a rapist because I need to move or stop or do something. And it's the same thing.
I get nervous.
I don't want to go into this area with children because I don't want to come off as a creep.
I get nervous. I'm thinking like, damn it, I have to go. I think I told you guys a story when I accidentally followed a woman back to her hotel room because we basically had the exact same hotel. Like, I've never been more uncomfortable. Like, I think I made her more uncomfortable from my uncomfortableness. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what to do like in this situation, but we're on the same floor. Yeah, my room's over there. I was at my vet's office with the drama that's been going on with my dog, and when I was picking her up, the receptionist had a female had a really cool tattoo sleeve up top. It's Chucky and like the box with the Child's Play box, and then went down to a scene from The Exorcist, and on the hand was the actual iconic silhouette. And I was like, oh man, I really love your tattoos. That's awesome. I love the horror sleeve. And she was kind of like, oh, okay, thanks. And I was like, oh no, she probably thinks I'm hitting on her. Like, God damn it. Like, I really just want to talk to you about the horror sleeve. I also don't want to come off as creepy, but that's so cool. Like, you always feel when I'm somewhere with my daughter, like my daughter was with me, I could have that conversation and it'd be way less. But and this is the sad reality of what women go through. And I mean, I'm not saying this is like, oh my God, look how hard I have it. No, I'm saying like, this is a world we have built for ourselves, men, and we need to try to fix it.
Everything you just said right there means you'll find things to enjoy in the Barbie
movie. Okay.
and just to, you know, complete my left-wing movie watching this weekend, the same day I watched Barbie, my kids at back home wanted to watch the new Little Mermaid, the one where a black actress plays Ariel. And you know what? It was also good. I liked it. And it's set in the Caribbean. So they're not all white people in the Caribbean. Actually, most people aren't white in the Caribbean. It makes perfect sense. The casting was great. She's great. That actress who they have playing Little Mermaid, she is fantastic.
That's cool.
Cool special effects.
I saw a sneak or test screening of that months ago. Melissa McCarthy is just amazing in that. Fantastic. And it was like, it sucks seeing something that amazing and not be able to talk about it with anyone.
Yeah.
Jason just straight being the one upper. Like, it's cool you saw that recently, Jody, but I saw that months ago. Like, it's already old news at this point for Hollywood elite like me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm totally part of the Hollywood elite. Yeah, for sure.
Jason, drinking that baby blood to stay young looking, you know?
Isn't everyone who lives in LA part of the movie industry? I mean, that's part of it, right?
We're all on strike right now.
We're not working.
I mean, I don't work in Hollywood, but I'm on strike with solidarity anyways, so.
Yeah. It just means you're staying home, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was working from home.
Man.
All right. But we got some crypt talk to do, so let's hop into it, because we got plenty more to talk about afterwards. Today, we're talking about Season 7, Episode 4, Escape, which came out on May 17th, 1996. Jody, give us the plot synopsis.
Escape. It's French.
Escape.
All right. We open up on the Crypt Keeper as a drill sergeant yelling at a bunch of skeletons. Just good times right there. When we get our actual story, though, it's towards the end of World War II. And obviously, we're in England because we're all in England right now. Mm-hmm. There's a group of Germans that are running from the Allies after an escape attempt, and several of them are shot. And we find out that one of those men, named Luger, he gets captured and taken to the Havenhurst POW camp in England. And he has been, like, that escape attempt, he was actually on the inside working with one of the British soldiers to thwart that escape attempt. And so he spied on his own men. And so now he expects all these extra privileges at the POW camp. But there's a new commander who, instead of being impressed by his spying and ratting out his own men, thinks he's a coward and a traitor. And so he puts him in Gen Pop with all the other soldiers. And right after he gets there, a new group of Germans approach him about planning another escape attempt. Which, I mean, if dude just got caught again on escape attempt and then they're like, hey, he's the guy, that seems dumb.
But, yeah, right? Like, if you're, yeah, if like, if you, it's kind of like, no, because in the corporate world, you can be a CEO and tank a company, and another company's like, yeah, come tank our company too. It's totally fine. Like,
do it again. So he's put to work building coffins for British soldiers. And one of the German men, a man named Albert Fry, says that they're alike because they're both perfectly happy staying at the camp with and having all the privileges there. They don't really want to escape. And while all this is going on, one of the men who Luger had betrayed in the previous attempt is brought to the camp hospital, and Luger's afraid of being exposed. And so Luger goes to the major to report about this current attempt, thinking it will get him some favor with him, but the major doesn't care. And we find out he specifically asked for that wounded soldier to be transported there because he hates Luger and he wants his secret revealed that he's a traitor. And so to get revenge on the major, Luger tells a woman aid worker that the major is violating the Geneva Convention. And that never goes anywhere. Like, that's just mentioned and that's pretty much that. The men continue to plot their escape and they're going to go through these tunnels under the camp. And Luger keeps telling Fry, who's kind of following him around, that he doesn't want his help. And while they're in the tunnels, Luger punches Fry and knocks him out. And then he climbs up into the hospital ward to kill the injured soldier, but is ambushed by one of the guards. And before the guard can shoot him, though, Fry reappears and knocks the guard out. Everybody here gets knocked out super easy. One punch, bam, they're down. But then they get over it pretty quick, too. So Luger holds a pillow over the injured soldier's face until he thinks he's dead. But then the soldier jumps up and hits him in the face with a pan. And Luger slits that man's throat, and he and Fry run back in the tunnels. But the man isn't completely dead and crawls across the floor to the window where he writes Luger's name in blood on the window. And the men who had previously been planning their escape attempt see the writing while they're out there in the yard. And so I guess they know something. They know from that guy.
You can say they saw the writing on the wall.
Oh. Luger's still like in the tunnels, and he spies on the major as a soldier tells him about this guy getting murdered. And then the major's taking a call, and he tells the soldier who's reporting to him that a general is coming to the camp soon, and he doesn't want the general to see all the coffins, and orders the soldier to get rid of them. So Luger and Fry run through the tunnels until they come to a truck filled with all those coffins, and they hide inside one of them together. And after driving for a while, the soldier dumps all the coffins on the ground in a field and drives away, leaving Luger and Fry free. And when Luger comes out of the coffin, though, he finds that the major is standing there with a gun, and the major shoots him in the leg. And then Luger yells that he's been set up. We find out exactly how much he's been set up because Fry then joins the general, who addresses him as Lieutenant Forsyth. He's been on the inside the whole time working with the major.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then the major tells Luger that the call he received was actually a call telling him that the war was over and all the other prisoners will soon be set free. And then he shoots Luger and kills him out in the field. The end.
All right. Mondo, what did you think of this episode?
I didn't dislike this one. I actually liked a lot of pieces in it. A couple things. The Geneva Convention line was funny because imagine a Nazi complaining about the Geneva Convention. I'm just saying, like, those kooky Germans and the kooky Nazis and their Geneva Conventions. A couple odd things about this. Yeah, but they never bring that up again. They talk about how they might be able to get the nurse to help them, but that plot point kind of just goes away. So I wonder if that's something that got cut out in the final edit of this, or that maybe they had plans for it. Again, this is, we talked about a couple episodes ago and the one with the stupid writers and Murder, She Wrote episode about how like this plan was so convoluted because everything had to fall in place. Well, a lot of things had to fall in place here too, but it makes sense because you had this guy Fry who was kind of orchestrating the whole thing. Right. And he was making sure like the plot progressed the way he wanted the plot to progress. So that made a lot of sense. And
that's a good point because I was confused why he like still saved them from the other gunmen or whatever.
Yeah, because that's not how it, because at the end of the day, I mean, it was the lieutenant, that's, it's his show, right? He wants this guy to die in a very specific manner. And, you know, it's kind of like one of those movies, like, I want him, but bring him to me alive. And it was kind of one of those situations. Yeah, the weirdness of it comes in that, again, it's a Tales episode with no horror. It's a movie escape plot, which actually I like those kind of things, but I kind of want more horror for my Tales from the Crypt. The acting I thought was really, really well done. And this is not a knock on the episode. This is just me being a grump when it comes to certain movies. I do hate like when you have all these Germans together in the barracks and they're speaking English.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of weird. It's a POW camp. They have a lot of freedom. They just have maps everywhere.
Well, yeah, they're letting like a relief worker who's a woman just like free roaming with them.
Yeah. And just talking to the. Yeah. And I don't know. Maybe I was never a POW, but.
It's kind of like German summer camp. Like they're all in like a thing together and they're all hanging out and looking at stuff. Yeah.
Did you guys?
I wasn't sure if that's real. It doesn't seem real to me.
Did you guys ever watch Parks and Rec?
No. Mm-hmm.
There's an episode based on everyone has to pick a country and to represent, and that's who they're going to kind of role play as a country. And I forgot, like, Andy doesn't want to be part of the Finns because they're the enemy in like one of the Rocky movies. He doesn't want to be part of the other country. He goes, oh, I know, I'll be Germany because they've never been the enemies anywhere. He's all excited. But I do think it's kind of odd that you have this character, Luger, who I don't know if they're trying to set him up. He obviously is not a good person, right? Mm-hmm. But I couldn't kind of tell if they're trying to set him up to be the protagonist, which is really odd because I don't want to root for a Nazi, but they're also very careful to never say the word Nazi.
Yeah.
They do show the I forgot what they call it, the eagle with the, the wings. They do show that, which is a very prominent Nazi symbol. So I thought that was kind of odd because there was really no, I mean, the protagonists are the allies, right?
But they're the good guys, at least.
They're the good guys, at least. But they're also kind of... I feel like if you wanted to, you could have just brought this guy up in war crimes, just killed him. Like, I don't think you would have had to go with this whole plot, but...
Well, that's the irony in that.
Yeah.
That he's like, what, the last man to die in the war and yada yada.
Yeah, I did like that twist. I actually did really, really enjoy that twist. Yeah. Very reminiscent of Yellow, obviously.
Yeah.
Yellow and All Quiet on the Western Front.
Yeah.
If you watch if you guys seen the new one, the new remake?
No, I've not.
Oh, it's good. It's long, but it's really good.
Yeah. So yeah, I would say it's for season 7, it's been one of the brighter spots in my opinion.
Yeah, Jordy.
Yeah, I'm right there with Mondo. I was telling Jason before we ever started recording, I'm like, I have really low expectations going into every one of these episodes right now. And this one actually, you know, was a pleasant surprise. Like, I thought it was well made. There are several plot lines that if I think about it too hard, I'm like, this just kind of gets dropped. Like the whole thing about him being a traitor and like it being revealed to the other men, it doesn't matter. Like the guy riding Luger in blood, like none of that matters because in the end, like the major's the one who kills him. Like it rewrites in my brain, if he had been revealed to be a traitor, but he didn't know that the men knew and he went back among the men and the men somehow got revenge. Mm-hmm. Okay, I could see that. Like that could lead somewhere. But overall, though, you know, loose ends aside, I thought it was a pretty good episode. I like the twist at the end. It's not the most like surprising twist ever, but I still thought it was well executed. Good acting all around. I like the World War II set. Like there had to be at least a little budget here because the whole like period setting, like it looked really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm assuming like in England, they, just because they've made so many World War II movies, like they just have like those sets and those props and those vehicles just kind of like in the warehouse whenever they need it.
Either way, it's a good looking episode, particularly, you know, like I said, for season 7. So, yeah, a bright spot in the middle of this season, I think.
Yeah, I really thought they're going to kind of end it when he tried to kill the other German soldier. I thought that was going to be the impetus for the lieutenant killing him. Like, and that way he gets rid of two Nazis at once, which I don't think anyone's ever complained about. So yeah, it was kind of surprising how that plot line just kind of really didn't go anywhere.
It just didn't go anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, anytime a movie or a TV show, whatever, ends with a Nazi dying, I'm like, okay, That wasn't a waste of time. I dig it. I do think that, yeah, there's a lot of things happening in the middle of the episode that don't really come of anything. I think that's just because they were trying to stretch out for time, is what that kind of smells like to me. Because this was an Alan Gilbert episode, and I think they're just like, okay, we've got a good beginning, we got a good ending. You just need to stretch out a little bit. So they put in the relief worker and some things to maybe give the audience some false hope or something.
Okay, I do have a take it back. So it did make sense that he killed the guy. It didn't. That plot did make more sense than I think it did, because the reason he went, they went into the tunnels not to escape initially, but for the sole purpose of killing that guy. When they killed him, then they decided to escape because they thought that they found the dead body and were pulling everybody out of the barracks. So yeah, it actually does make sense, because that's what forced them to try the escape attempt, which got him killed at the end. So I guess that plot line did make sense, because you had to have a catalyst for Luger to want to go in the tunnels and have another catalyst for him to now want to escape after he was saying, I don't think we're going to be able to escape.
Right. Yeah. All that made sense. It's more just the other people finding out that he's the traitor None of that went anywhere.
Wouldn't it be great if Luger was played by former WCW World Heavyweight Champion Lex Luger? That'd be awesome. Yes. He looks so out of place, especially if he's just wearing his spandex trunks the whole time and just walking around jacked as fuck. just completely out of place in the episode.
I will say, though, so the guy who played Luger, Martin Kemp, he had some very nice blue eyes. Like, he was kind of captivating in that sense. He was in Waxwork 2.
Which is an underrated movie, I will say. Waxwork and Waxwork 2.
I love those.
Wonderful fun.
I've seen the first one. I haven't seen the second one.
The second one's lots of fun, too.
Yeah, okay. Definitely.
The first one's a better overall horror movie. The second one, they kind of went a little bit wackier with it, but it's a fun. Uh-huh. It's fun as hell. It's kind of like Night of the Demons and Night of the Demons 2. Like, Night of the Demons 2 is definitely wackier, but like, when you make a movie like Waxwork, you can't come back with the same movie. You got to go more over the top in the second
one. Right. Got to get bigger, sillier.
He's also in many episodes of EastEnders. I think that show's been redone a couple different times. So he was on 200 plus episodes of the original.
Who was he in Waxwork 2?
You have to look it up. I don't have a character name. So this episode, I think, yeah, Von Frankenstein, now that you say it.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that role.
Okay, so this was directed by Peter McDonald, who also directed Rambo 3 and Never Ending Story 3. So he's got a thing for third movies. He's also assistant director on many, many, many movies, like Kubrick movies, everything.
Nice.
Okay, the Albert Fry, Lieutenant Forsythe character, Nicholas Grace. He's in a lot of British stuff, but recently he was in Killing Eve. As far as actors go, the guy who played the Major Nicholson, Roy, it's either Detrice or Detrice, he has a huge career. You've definitely seen this guy if you don't know it. So he was actually in the Tell Us in the Crypt 70s movie, the Wish You Were Here Monkey Paw episode. He was the friend or lawyer or whatever. So it's interesting. I think he's probably the only actor who was in both the movie and in the series, at least that we've encountered so far. He played Amadeus's father in Amadeus. He was in The Beauty of the Beast, the TV show. He was in Suburban Commando, which made me go in the whole rabbit hole in that movie. He was in Hellboy 2. He was in Game of Thrones. He was actually a POW in World War II.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he really knows what he's talking about. Here's an interesting little IMDb trivia on this guy. He was entered in the Guinness Books of World Records for his voice work on the audiobook versions of George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones. The project was cited as having the greatest number of characters, 224, voiced by a single person in an audiobook.
Wow, that's crazy.
His audiobooks for the first 5 books of the series, A Song of Fire and Ice, have a combined running time approximately 201 hours.
Jeez. Damn. Yeah, my dad's a big audiobook guy, and he listened to all of those, so he's probably heard this narration, but he said the hardest thing for listening to those on audiobook in particular is just keeping up, because there are so many characters. Mm. Like, you feel like you need a chart.
What's interesting when you listen to audiobook and they have a man trying to do the male and the female voices and everything, because I remember the first time I listened to before I read Da Vinci Code, I listened to an audiobook.
Yeah.
And they had one guy doing all the French accents, the American accents, and the woman. It was a bit of a
circus. When it comes to audiobooks, I really only listen to autobiographies And yeah, I'll only listen to it if the person who wrote it is actually narrating it. Because if not, it takes me out of it. Like, if I'm listening to an audiobook and it's not the same, like, I know what the person's voice sounds like. It sucks that they're not narrating. But I can't, I don't like fiction books and stuff like that. For me, like, part of the fun, and this is not a knock on anyone that likes audiobooks. I know a lot of people that love audiobooks. Mm-hmm. And it's a really cool medium to get that, you know, on the way to work or whatever. But I feel like, at least the way my brain works, is I like when I read it and like to be able, I can't envision it the same when I'm listening to it from an audiobook.
I have the same thing. I have tried so many times to get an audiobook, and I've liked a couple that I've listened to, but it feels like I'm working for it, you know?
Yeah.
like when I'm just
reading it.
When I've only had that real commute a couple times, in like back in like the 2000s, I'll rent audiobooks from my library and I listen to them on my commutes. This is again before podcasts or anything. Now I listen to podcasts.
I listen to podcasts too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think podcasts have kind of taken over that niche for a lot of people.
I was just thinking about like when people are saying, oh, there's so many more distractions when you're driving now. And I just imagine when I was like 20 with my book of CDs, trying to change CDs while I'm steering with my knees.
I'm like, wait, I got to flip my cassette. but back to the episode, there's that scene where he's trying to kill the guy. He's strangling with a pillow.
Mm-hmm.
And
he was smothering him with the pillow. He wasn't strangling. Smothering. Strangulation is when you stop the flow of blood to the brain. He was smothering him.
You know a little too much about that, but we're going to glaze over that fact.
That's my hobby.
That's his hobby. Actually.
Again, I haven't been strangled or smothered or anything, but I do like
you should try it sometime because in some situations it can be
okay
scary and some it can be fun quite fun.
we're not gonna go down the David Carradine route, but does this thing I've always wondered time out, about
Jason. No one is saying to wrap a belt around your neck and hang yourself in the closet while you masturbate. I don't know what you're talking about, but but if someone else applies gentle pressure, it can be quite nice.
That's okay. Not part of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, right?
Well, I mean, you know, there's a I don't know what they do in Brazil, but we don't do that in our school.
So the guy who's being attacked either plays dead or passes out for a moment or just like stops moving, so the guy will stop. And I'm like, why don't they do that more? Like, I was just thinking, like, if that was happening to me, and I was in a situation where, like, I was no way for me out of it. I know that, like, this is no way out of the situation. That's what I would do. I would just play dead and make the guy think that, you know.
Yeah, I thought that's really cool.
Have another chance.
I thought
that was kind of badass. I was like, I don't know if that's like a real thing, or like that would happen or not, or if you have enough wherewithal to play dead
in real life. Like, let's just be honest. I think if you're trying to kill someone in that manner, like you're just holding on to that pillow until your arms can't hold on to anymore. Like,
right.
Like it takes, it takes quite a bit actually to kill someone from smothering and strangulation. I mean, usually you strangle someone and if you strangle for too long, they just pass out and they wake back up and they're okay. You got to hold that on. Like you got to hold it on for a long time actually to kill somebody.
Yeah. And this is all like movie stuff, but I like that. That was a little jump scare a little bit.
No, me too. Yeah. I thought it was actually really well done. Yeah, that was very smart.
I wasn't expecting that.
And that guy was resilient, got his neck slit, and he's still like, fuck that. I'm going to write this guy's name on the window.
Yeah.
You know what would be really funny? Like, if you're on your deathbed, right? Let's say you're on your deathbed. Like, if I'm ever on my deathbed, I'm dying or whatever, I'm going to cut my hand open and just write some random person's name on the window. Like, I'm just going to look in the phone book or I don't know what's going to be around at that time and just, like, write some random person's name. Like, I don't know, like, my optometrist's name.
Someday a police officer is going to be knocking on my door. It's like, why did Mondo write Jody with blood?
Okay, first of all, like, there's so many Jodys out there. I'd write his full name. That's a lot. But I want to write like Dr. I don't know. I don't have a top.
Just write somebody who, you know, you didn't like some boss you had like 30 years before,
But I think then though, like then cops actually have to actually look into it and it might make sense. Mm-hmm. If you just wrote like your optometrist name, it's so much funnier because like the cops are like, why the fuck did he write? And like, and then you might just ruin this average person. No, you wouldn't ruin their life. But the guy's like, why do you write my name in blood on the windows? He was dying. And it would just be
confused. It's a good thing. Maybe it's someone you liked.
Yeah. I mean, I you draw hard at the end. Yeah. I don't know, but wouldn't that be just crazy to write some random person's name in blood? I think Norman Donald needs to talk about that. He's talking about if you commit suicide, just write a suicide note and blame like some random person, like blame your garbage man. I killed myself because Bob the garbage man did a shitty job or something.
I will say one of my biggest stressors in life is the garbage, is making sure the garbage is out.
Like, why is that such a stressor? I mean,
when you have this many kids, if that doesn't happen, your whole week's going to be a shit show.
Okay. I mean, I have two garbage cans because that's what they give us, and two big ones. Right. And it's Monday, so I know it comes out tomorrow. So all that happens, we're done recording here. Inside baseball, we're recording on a Monday. I'm just going to go downstairs. I'm just going to take them out. It's not like it's
no.
See, if you live out in the country like me, we don't have garbage pickup out here, so I have to load it up and haul it all to the dump, which I hate doing because if I don't have a truck, like if you had a truck, it's no big deal. You just throw it all in the back of the truck, but I have to throw it in the back of the van. And so if you got a leaky bag, you could stink up your car for a long time. It's a problem. I want garbage pickup out here.
That actually sucks. Like you could also just dump in your neighbor's yard. Like, fuck it. Like just
our worst neighbor's getting ready to move. So maybe I'll just start throwing my trash in her yard.
There you go.
Just find a church that doesn't let gay people in, just fucking dump it in there because they're garbage anyways. They'll just fill the rest of the garbage that goes there. Like the people, yep. just the people.
Have
just
you keep... ever been in the South? Are there churches that let people gay people know. In the South?
I don't know, but like no one even exist. Noticed because the garbage would just belong there. I'm like, oh, that's just. I thought that was Stan. Like, no, that's that's the bag awesome. Of garbage.
All right, Jody, give us a comic comparison.
All right, so this came from The Vault of Horror, number 16, September 1950. A big issue for the TV show. Werewolf Concerto came from this one. Mm. And, there was one other one that I really like. But I can't remember what it was. If I think of it later, I'll tell you. But the story and art for this one, pretty cool here, was both by Al Feldstein. And I'm not used to seeing his name on the art side of things. Al Feldstein is kind of one of the big guys there at EC. He writes a lot of the stuff with Bill Gaines, but this time he actually did art too. And it's good art. I really like some of the like dramatic poses with the cool lighting. In this one, hang on, I pulled up that issue. Fitting Punishment came from this one, which is one of my favorite episodes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So this is set in a regular prison, and the guy's name is still Luger. It's Pete Luger this time. I don't know why he has that German name, but
yeah, I'm wondering if that's where Al and Gil got the idea to set it in World War II.
Because this is not at all a World War II story. It's just a prison story. So. Luger once ran a nationwide crime syndicate, and the other prisoners who work with him, and they work making bricks in this brickyard. They all hate him. I guess maybe because he was one of the higher ups. But one day Luger sees a hearse and it's transporting out somebody who had been executed. And he comes up with the idea that he is going to try to hide in a coffin. And so when the hearse leaves, he'll just go out with the hearse. And so he volunteers to work in the morgue where nobody wants to work. And it's a pretty cushy job. Everybody else is down there making bricks, and he's just hanging out in the air-conditioned place with some dead bodies. But
there's a panel when he's looking outside. He's like, ha-ha, suckers, look at them carrying all the bricks.
No, absolutely, there's a panel like that. Yeah, there's a panel like that. So he's got him a desk job, basically. And so he is working there, and then he finds out about this scheduled execution that's going to happen in a couple days. And he gets one of these men who used to work under him to come, and he says, you know, I'm going to hide in this coffin, and I want you to follow the hearse. And once it gets to this point, you're going to overtake it, and then I'll be free. And so after this man is executed, Luger hides the body somewhere and then hides himself in the coffin. And the guards come in looking for Luger, and they're like, oh, I guess he must have gone to get lunch. Again, these prisons are really loose. Like they're like, oh, where is this guy? Probably getting lunch. Okay. They say, oh, well, this lazy guy didn't even nail down the coffin lid. So they nail down the lid and he's in there. And you see the little like thought bubble pop out where he's like, oh, I'm just about there. They're going to let me free. But the whole time we don't know what the guys who are making the bricks are actually building. And they don't know either. They're just making bricks. We find out in the end though, that what they have been building this whole time is a crematorium. And so rather than being loaded up onto the hearse, Luger in his coffin is loaded into the crematorium with the flames, and then the doors are shut. Honestly, really good comic. Like, I really liked this one. It was a cool twist. This whole thing about the bricks the whole time just kind of built up to that ending.
It was, it's a bit predictable, but it was still good.
you know, it's Tails, so you know there's going to be a twist at the end. But, you know, the crematorium at the end being what gets him. There's a lot of things that could have gotten him. You know, the men hated him. The guards didn't like him. But I thought it was a good comic. It had its own thing going.
I liked the art style. It was very clean, which is nice. Mm-hmm. If this is like your first episode, yeah, that'd be a really good twist.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but... Yeah, it was set in a prison. Like, you can't have a crematorium in a World War II themed episode if you're going, because then you're going a direction that we shouldn't be going.
That's also very true.
That's bad.
How many prisons actually have crematoriums though? Like, is that actually a real prison?
Probably not all that common to execute and then cremate people.
I don't know.
Well, there was a part in the comic where they're saying that they have a week for a family member to claim them. If not, they just get sent to some generic graveyard.
Like the Potter's Field, where they just
bury
everybody.
So I think that might be why the people that aren't claimed. That's probably.
I'm just wondering if that's a real thing, like that prisons have those.
Possibly. Maybe. All right. Now, we got to do our episode rating. What do you guys rate this episode? Jody?
Yeah, it may be some season 7 bias here, but I feel like this is like a 3. I've been going back and forth between 3, 3.5, but I think I'm probably going to land on 3 because some of those loose ends, but not a bad episode at all. Like, just a decent, good episode. I liked it. Mm-hmm.
Mondo.
Yep, I'm same way. 3, middle of the road. Just decent episode. I think it's perfectly acceptable. Like, I wouldn't tell anyone, you know, if someone's like, "Hey, what episodes should I watch?" I wouldn't say go out of your way to watch it, but I thought it was perfectly fine.
A friend of mine used to have a podcast, and it's the friend I was talking about earlier. But he used to use the phrase "perfectly acceptable horror," as in, like, you know, it's not going to change the world. It's not going to be your favorite, but it's fine. You throw it on, have a good time with it. Yep. I feel like this falls under that category.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. I mean, I was waiting between 2.5 and the 3, but yeah, I feel the same. 3. It's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's kick over to Al Katz.
Hi, it's Alan. Escape was actually the first episode we shot in England. Gil was in Los Angeles cutting Bordello of Blood, so I had to come. Now, one of the very cool things about shooting Crypt in England was that we got to shoot in locations we could only have dreamed of before. Actual castles. And for the Escape episode, we scouted and shot at Dover Castle, right by the White Cliffs of Dover. Dover Castle has played a long and important part in English history. Most recently, the tunnels beneath Dover Castle were part of Winston Churchill's World War II defensive infrastructure. I'm a history buff. Can I tell you? Walking around places like that was transcendent. We were to start shooting at the castle first thing Monday morning, so we sent the whole crew out to Dover the day before, Sunday. Normally, that part of England doesn't get a whole lot of snow. So our English production staff was surprised, as we headed east to Dover, that we were also heading into the face of a potentially gathering snowstorm. We were supposed to shoot for 2 days at the castle, but the weather forecast for the rest of the week starting on Tuesday, our second day, was dire. Shooting would have been hard, but getting the crew back to London, where shooting would continue Wednesday right on schedule, that loomed as a question mark. Peter McDonald, the episode's director, he worried about the exact same things. As he began Monday's work, he did it with an eye toward packing in as much of Tuesday's work as he could, with another eye toward rewriting the script on the fly to eliminate the need for a second day on location. Peter saw a way to use interiors we were already building back at the studio. The only question would be, would the sets be ready for us on Tuesday, provided we could get back to London Monday night? It was a logistical challenge. In the end, I went with Peter's plan. Wait, is that like Peter Pan? No, I don't think so. We went with Peter's plan and shot out the location in one day and got the whole crew back to London just before nothing happened. The threatened snowstorm, it turned south, hit the coast of France instead. We got some great footage of Dover Castle, but we would have had much more. Weird, but that very dynamic summed up the whole Crypt in London experience. See you next time.
And we're back. Mondo, give us your song of the day.
So I don't have a song. I have just someone who I want to bring attention to as a really, really cool artist on YouTube. Well, he has a band. His band is called Plan Left, but the creator's name is Dennis Pauna. That's a D-E-N-I-S-P-A-U-N-A. And I'd highly recommend everyone kind of go check this guy out. He's a super talented musician from Croatia, I think. But he does really cool mashups. He'll do like, what if Typo Negative wrote Never Gonna Give You Up? a recent one he did that I thought was amazing is What If Motorhead Wrote Cowboys From Hell? He did like, What If Motorhead Wrote Kill 'Em All? Some other ones, What If Alice in Chains Wrote Paranoid? What if Typo Negative wrote The Sound of Silence? I don't even know what song that is, to be honest with you. Or like, he does a whole...
Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. He does, What If ZZ Top Wrote the whole album Kill 'Em All?
Oh, wow.
And he's super talented and they all sound amazing. And he just blows me away with how good of a musician he is. His band is definitely kind of not my cup of tea. But if you like just good, solid rock music, I think a lot of people would find it up their alley. But I really think more people should. The fact this guy only has like, he has 85,000 subscribers. I still think that's criminal that he only has that many subscribers because he's such a, it's one of those things where I'll just jump on his channel and on an afternoon and like waste 2 hours. I don't say waste, enjoy 2 hours of my life, just kind of checking out a lot of his videos and a lot of what he can do. So definitely check him out and check his band out. He does have a Patreon too. If you're going to subscribe to just one Patreon account, it should be Dads from the Crypt. If you're going to subscribe to two, yeah, make the second one Dennis's page. But yeah, I'm a big fan of his, and I think everyone should kind of check him out. And just if you like any of those bands I mentioned, Metallica, Black Sabbath, Alice in Chains, Typo Negative, I think he did a What If Korn Made Enter Sandman?
Mm-hmm. No,
it's interesting. It sucks.
I love stuff like this. So I love mashups and, you know, where they take the different beats and the different sounds and stuff like that, mix them together. But also there's a channel that I like on TikTok and other places called There I Ruined It.
Yes, I've seen that. Yeah.
And he uses some AI sometimes.
I hate it so much.
Well, yeah, but where else are you going to hear Johnny Cash go, I'm a Barbie girl.
No, okay. I was teeing up.
Plastic. You know, it's funny.
I was teeing up to go on a rant because that is like, that hurts my soul.
Why?
I'm a big Johnny Cash fan. Like,
that's fine.
My dad liked Johnny Cash. I don't know. It just seems so manipulative. Like, if you want to get an impersonator to do it, okay, you fine. Know, that's someone giving their performance.
Here's what I would say, that they're doing it for fun and they're not doing it to. They're not trying to sell it and try to act like it was really Johnny Cash. They're very, very open to what they're doing, which I think
it's
is
literally called "I Ruined It."
Yeah, which is a very important. I think when the people are going to use AI for even artwork, I think it's very important that people are very upfront right away saying, "I made this using AI." Like, this is not. And if they do that, to me, I have less of an issue with it than when like studios want to use AI likenesses of actors to put them in movies.
Absolutely.
Against their will.
Okay.
Yeah, knowing
that that's the origin, Jody, from the I Ruined It channel, that makes me a little bit less mad about it.
Every time it
pops up on my feed, I'm like, ugh.
The There I Ruined It is it's just for fun. It's just so that you can go, well, that's nuts. I heard Johnny Cash sing Barbie Girl.
My sister sent that to me because she knows I like that song. Because it's
Folsom
off of
City, or Folsom Prison Blues.
Yeah. Like, yeah, she knows I like that song. She sent that to me. It's like, oh, my kids love singing this. And I'm like,
you know what? You know, there's another piece to it, too. And real fast before I get to that piece. One thing about Dennis, though, I think he plays all the instruments himself.
Yeah.
And he writes a song from scratch. Like, one of my favorite ones, I'm a metalhead, obviously, is what if the band Death wrote Beat It? And I'm like, holy shit, he's such a good musician. It blows me away. So I just want to bring that up. He's not using AI or doing, I shouldn't say he's doing mashups. He's writing all this music himself. He's taking
that's the kind of thing
writing himself.
Yeah, no, yeah, no.
That's the thing
what
I can appreciate.
What he's doing is a lot better than what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's.
I like when people play with things like that. Play with genre, play with style, play with what if a different band did their style on this song? Like, I enjoy those kind of like thought exercises,
And I've heard a lot of them that are very, very just poorly done. This guy is fucking great. And Jason, to your point, so you said your sister sent it to you and her kids are singing it, right? But kind of the good part about this is if that exposes her kids to Johnny Cash, like that's a net positive at the end of the day.
Yeah, it is. But or just play Johnny Cash. That's how I got into it.
But we come from a different era, dude. Like,
I know. This is my just old man rant.
Like, but yeah. how many of us got into Johnny Cash like when we were kids versus when he did all of his stuff as an old man?
Oh, it was funny. I got into
like old man Johnny Cash is what made me listen to young man Johnny Cash.
Yes, same here.
No, I was listening like A Boy Named Sue, like when I was a kid. And my father used to play
Hurt.
That for us.
Jason had the one up. Like.
No, I'll totally admit the first time I remember the exact first time I heard Up. It was just like on the NPR or something like that, or Sound Eclectic. And it was like a transcendent moment of like, this is just because I love the original and someone just made it even better. It was just transcendent.
Yeah, I really got into Johnny Cash because of the song Hurt. And I'll be honest, I do not like the original version. I'm by no means a Nine Inch Nails fan. They're just not, just not my thing. And I think even Trent Reznor would probably argue that Johnny Cash did it better. And that's not a knock on for people that are fans of Nine Inch Nails. That's not a knock on them at all. He just took that song though and owned it like it was his.
Johnny Cash knew how to like sing that song with the right amount of pain in it. Like,
yes.
Yeah. Well, Trent Reznor,
an old man who's been through his life.
Yeah. Trent Reznor said in an interview he felt like someone stole his girlfriend. but he knew it was better for her.
Hey, man. Imagine like. I get goosebumps just thinking about like if I wrote a song and then Johnny Cash covered it. Like I get like holy shit. Like I couldn't even imagine what that would feel like. Speaking of covers too, Amigo the Devil, who I've talked about several times on here, has a really cool covers and B-side album where he does a Taylor Swift song on there, I think. It's Taylor Swift, like What If He Cheated or something.
Before He Cheats.
Is that the name of the song?
That's a Carrie Underwood song.
Yeah, Carrie Underwood.
Carrie Underwood. That's who he does. Carrie Underwood. But then he also does this. I'm just stalling for time here. This makes for great radio as I look it up.
Don't you always love it when we're Googling live while we're recording?
You know, though, like I respect when podcasts I listen to do it because if you're listening to that podcast and you're like scream at the radio, like because you're naming the movie and they're not getting it, and they Google and get it, and you're like, thank you.
That's why I do the spreadsheets with all the actors and the characters' names. I hate people do that.
Yeah, everyone loves your spreadsheets. And I'm not saying that facetiously. I mean that really. Oh, he does a cover of Delilah and turns it into this minor key, like creepy fucking song about like murder, about stalking someone basically. And it's so good. Yeah. And another.
What's that called?
That's called Amigo the Devil. The album's called Covers, Demos, Live Versions, and B-Sides. I'll set it. I can't send it to you because you're on that Spotify. No, I'm on Apple Music, and then
I can look that up.
And another band, the band Ghost, who let's fucking not talk about what they become. They become a teeny bopper band. Fucking goddamn it! You know what? When your band plays live, and 70% of you playing live is you fucking talking on stage, get the fuck out of here. Go back to being a cool fucking band that sounds like Blue Oyster Cult. You fucking jerk off. But I digress. The first time I saw them play live was at the Roxy on their first tour in the U.S., which is called the 13 Dates of Doom, and they ended the set with a minor key version of the Beatles' "Here Comes the Sun," and holy shit, it's fucking awesome. Good, amazing.
I love a good live cover.
If a band does a good cover. Like it can be something, you know, really special because you get to hear it from a different perspective. I really like the album from Cake. You remember Cake?
Yeah, I love Cake.
I Will Survive. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
I just want to drop Jason.
I love Cake.
I love Cake. But they have an album that's B-sides and rarities, and they do a bunch of covers on there, including like a Barry White song. And it's fun. I love it a lot. Like it's one of my favorite of their albums.
Mondo, here's one for you. I saw late 90s. I saw Jerry Cantrell open for Metallica.
I was at that show in Vegas.
In Vegas. Yeah. I was at the Gorge.
With Days of the New.
Yeah.
In the room.
Yes. Did they? So the Gorge is like this like big amphitheater that leads down to this huge canyon.
Oh, dude, a comedian I love, Chad Daniels, on his podcast was talking about how they did a comedy show there, and he was talking about how much he loved the venue. Like, just
it's beautiful.
It sounds amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So just as the sun was setting, Jerry Cantrell did a great cover of Eclipse, Total Eclipse, not Total Eclipse, Eclipse and Brain Damage from Pink Floyd.
Oh, that's awesome. That's freaking awesome. I don't remember if they did it down here. So that when they did it in Vegas too, for it was kind of a cool venue because it got kicked out of its original venue and they did it at Cashman Field, which is our AAA baseball stadium. And it was just outdoors and a crazy atmosphere and, you know, one of those a happy accident that ended up being outside.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
It's a good outdoor tour.
Yeah, I remember we slept outside to get right up front, right on the rail. Nice. When that happened, the shit I could not do in my old age. Now I just mosey on in and be like, I just get a seat somewhere.
All right, Jody, give us some horror news.
All right, so I gotta start us off. We're having fun here, but I gotta start us off with some sad news, just because it needs to be mentioned. Paul Reubens, known for being Pee Wee Herman, and being in the Buffy the Vampire movie, passed away today at the age of 70 from cancer, which is very sad because as a kid, Pee-wee was huge in my life.
That was our demographic.
Man, I loved Pee-wee's Playhouse. It probably influenced my sense of humor in ways I don't even understand, you know?
So that's because no one understood that show.
No, but I loved wackiness. I loved it. And the wackiness of it, the craziness, the secret word and yelling. And I loved it. I loved it so much. It was I remember my dad not liking the show because it was just ridiculous, but it was something special. And you know, it's sad that he's gone because if you ever go back, here's my recommendation for everybody. If you grew up with the show, go watch his live show that he recorded for adults with Phil Hartman. I used to see it on Comedy Central. I think it's on YouTube now.
I've never seen that.
Phil Hartman plays a sea captain, and it's Pee-wee's Playhouse, but it's not a kid's show. It's done like a kid's show, but for an adult audience. So, you know, neat. The innuendo and stuff in there. Plus, you get to see Phil Hartman. So you can be doubly sad that both Pee-wee and Phil Hartman are no longer with us. But it's still worth watching. So on to horror news, though. A couple trailers. Saw X trailer has been released.
That looked better than I expected for at this point in the Saw.
Like, I got to say, I have not watched either of the two trailers I'm going to talk about because I'm trying to go in a little more blind on them.
What I would say about the Saw 10 trailers, it definitely sets up the story. And of course, I have to show you cool traps, but at no point do I think they actually give away too much.
Okay. I'll check that one out
then. My hope for this is that there's nothing to give away. It's just a straightforward Saw movie. Yeah.
Apparently, it happens being the first and the second Saw.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It's a sequel to the first movie.
Yeah.
You know how they like to do that now. And Jigsaw and Amanda are both back, Shawnee Smith's character. Mm-hmm. So that alone puts me in a happy place of Jigsaw and Shawnee Smith. So hopefully they just do it straight up. Like, we don't get too complicated, too much mythology. Right, exactly. I don't need too much.
Yeah, I think it was Saw 3, which really didn't have a twist.
Yeah.
And
it did.
But it wasn't like the twist, though, it wasn't really a huge like twist that didn't make sense because they had to have a twist. Everything made logical sense leading up to that point. Yeah. And in my opinion, one of the better Saw movies. The first one, obviously, iconic, right? And when people are like, oh, I saw it coming the whole time. No, you didn't. Like, no, you didn't.
No, you didn't.
Like, maybe you did if you watch it now, but I saw that movie in the theater and it first came out. Like, no one saw that coming.
No, like, everyone freaked out.
I remember thinking, like, they go so far out of their way in that movie to kind of prove the dead bodies. Spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't seen Saw, which came out 18 years ago. But they go out of their way, or 20 years ago, I think.
20 years ago, I know.
Yeah.
But they go out of their way to try to make you believe that there's like zero. They even like speculate in the movie that it might be him. And then they quickly do everything in their power to squash that. But I really liked though how the third one was just more straightforward. Like I'm with Jody. I don't need a crazy twist at the end.
Oh, I agree.
Because all that happens is I think when I watch a movie like that, I'm just thinking, what's the twist going to be? I have to think what the twist is going to be. But no, I just want just give me a good movie. And as a guy who walked in to that trailer with zero hopes, this is coming from a man that watched Jigsaw in the fucking theater thanks to MoviePass. God, that was a waste of my time and no money that I didn't spend. This looks good. I'm actually really excited.
Okay, good. Well, then I'm hopeful because I just want it to be straightforward. Like, I don't need mm-hmm. all the complications that it got in the later years. Going back to the beginning or after the first movie
makes me hopeful. Yeah.
But speaking of trailers that are sequels to the first movie, the Exorcist Believer trailer has dropped.
Yes. Have you guys seen it?
It's a sequel to the first movie.
Yeah.
Directed by David Gordon Green, the man who brought us Halloween 2018. Yay. Halloween Ends. Okay. Halloween Kills. Okay.
Halloween Ends.
Jason, cut that.
I'm making a reel of that, Jordy.
I'm gonna edit this on the episode to where it says Halloween.
I quit this podcast.
Halloween Kill Ends. Yay.
No.
And then I'm gonna cut Jason saying, "I like cake and Halloween Ends."
All right. So in this movie, Ellen Burstyn reprises her role as Chris McNeil. So again, we're very much in David Gordon Green's wheelhouse of doing a sequel to the first movie in a series and bringing back one of the original actors. I don't know. I don't know. Cause it's David Gordon Green. If he goes 2018. Okay. Yes. I'm in for this. If he goes Halloween Ends, he has proven he can make a good movie. He has also proven he can make a terrible movie. And I don't know which one he's going to make.
I watched the trailer. End of the trailer has some very, very genuinely creepy imagery.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What I would say is I recommend not watching the trailer for that alone, because I don't know if I'm going to watch it, to be honest. I'm probably going to wait for reviews on this one, but I'd like to walk in on blind and see that imagery just blind, because
just that's why really, I've been avoiding it.
Really creepy. But leading up to that point, the trailer was what are you guys doing?
I don't know if that imagery will actually, that imagery felt very trailery. Like the way they cut that seemed like very much this is something cool for the trailer. So I don't know if I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know if that will exactly, but so I actually, I remember reading about that they were going to show it during Oppenheimer, but not release it online yet. And then I went to see Oppenheimer with my wife, and I completely forgot that they might show that trailer. And the way the trailer starts is looks like a pretty, like your standard possession kind of movie. And then I completely forgot that there was an Exorcist thing. And then there's a point where the tubular bells come in, just like for a little snippet. And that was cool.
Tubular, which I thought was really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just a little key. I was like, oh shit. But then I remembered, oh wait, my wife is sitting with me who hates horror movies.
It's a trailer, but yeah.
And then as it ramped up, she just curled up into a ball and started crying.
Oh no.
She had full on panic attack. Okay. During this,
I put my arm around her. Effective trailer.
And she was like putting her hands over her ears. She was like, "Why are they showing this?"
Jason has her face like prying her eyes open. Watch it.
Watch it.
Like a hard box.
So for going in blind and just kind of experiencing that, and then experiencing my wife's terror, I was like, okay, I'm kind of into it. We'll see.
I will say that, like, I kind of don't. It's rare. I don't like judging a movie based off a trailer like that nowadays.
Sure.
Because I know it's not David Gordon Green making the trailer. It's marketing mm-hmm. people 100%. Trying to make it as hype as possible. And it's kind of like if you watch some of those trailers, even from like the 90s or early 2000s, which are like in your face, extreme sports kind of style trailers, and the movie's nothing like that. Mm-hmm. It could be something like that. Like, I think the key to do The Exorcist, an Exorcist sequel well, is subtlety. And this trailer did not look subtle at all.
Well, again, for the first half of the trailer, you don't know that's what it is.
But so the second I'm half, it's curious. Like, here's the entire movie in 45 seconds. And that's what I'm saying. If anybody out there is thinking about watching The Exorcist, I'd say go in blind. Luckily, my memory's terrible, and I'll forget all of this by the time the movie comes out. But
my thing is, I want this to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And I know David Gordon Green can make a good movie. He can make a really good movie, but his track record is real spotty for me.
But
at this point,
it's hard. It's hard though. Like they always, you know, it's kind of thing. You're only as good as your same football. You're only good as your last win. You're only as good as the last movie you made. I think the studios have faith in him. So we'll see.
Obviously. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Other horror news. This is for all your physical media collectors. Scream Factory is putting out 4K collector's editions of Pumpkinhead,
mm-hmm.
the Blob 1988 mm-hmm. version.
They did.
Not the collector's edition, not the 4K.
Sorry. They did the regular Blu-ray because that's one I bought last year.
I have it too. Yes, I just bought the steelbook.
Not to one up you guys, but I got Shawnee Smith to autograph mine.
Back to the one up again. That's what we're doing tonight. Like, this is just every time, no matter what I say, Jason's got something to one up me here.
Jason, are you 100 coins because you're a one upper?
Nice.
I just thought I'm pretty proud of that one. Like
other 4K collector's editions. Here's my shit. Night of the Demons is getting a 4K.
One and two.
Two's not going to be 4K. It will be a regular one, but it's still collector's edition. Also, Part 3, which is bad, but also, I love the series, so, you know.
Like, when I go to pre-order all this, I'm going to be torn on that third one. Like, it's going to be in the cart for sure. I don't know if it's making checkout, but it'll be in the cart.
Yeah, absolutely. Motel Hell is getting a 4K.
Yes. And
Creepshow. I don't know if I mentioned this before or not, but either way, lots of cool 4Ks coming from Scream Factory. And I don't know who is releasing this one, but there's a 25th anniversary limited edition 4K steelbook for Halloween H2O coming out on September 26th, which of Halloween sequels, probably in the top three or four.
H2O is solid. It's Resurrection.
H2O is a good movie. It's a lot better than I remembered it. I watched it not too long ago.
It's got a lot of flaws, but it's also the first Halloween movie I saw in the theater. So it definitely holds.
Okay,
Halloween is a very hit and miss series for me. Like, even 3 and 4, four and five that I like, I don't know if they're good at all. Like, I just don't know. But my final piece of news is again for collectors like me. NECA is at San Diego Comic-Con and they've revealed some stuff. One of them is a Chucky figure from the TV show Chucky.
Oh, it's so good.
It looks so good. It's got the melted face Chucky and a flipping off hand that you can use with that. Good stuff there. And they also revealed the next wave of Toonie Terrors figures, which includes Tarman from Night of the Living Dead or Return of the Living Dead. Looks awesome. Instant buy for me. Megan is a great looking figure. They have a Vincent Price Toonie Terrors
with his cat.
What's that? With his cat.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the Fiend from the Misfits band. Mm. So, yeah, whatever. But Tarman. Yeah. That Tarman looks great. Dude, and that's an instant.
I might be buying that trick or treat Tarman for $170. Like, fuck.
Man, it's been tempting. I know. That's the high end Tarman.
Hey, can I bring up one very important release? You did not mention this coming out in October.
Oh, yeah, there's so many.
Arrow Films is releasing the Hellraiser Quartet of Torment.
Yes.
Which is 4K. That was very close to being on this list.
Dude, 4K cuts of all the films. But did you read probably the coolest thing in the whole box set is disc 4 is going to be Hellraiser Bloodline, and it's going to be a newly uncovered work print version of the film. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not the Kevin Yeager cut, but like a work print, which was really cool.
Well, I think that became an Alan Smithy film.
Yeah.
Because it got changed so much from what it originally was. So I am fucking excited. I can't even hide my excitement for this. Like, that's the first thing I'm watching. Well, I want to watch them in order, right? And I do the right thing. But no, I'm going to tear that box set open when I get it and pop that disc. You can only order it in the UK right now, but it's region free. But if you order from Arrow Films, you can get the collector's edition, which has a cool Chatterer case.
Yeah. Yeah. And with all these special edition collector's editions, like a lot of them come with posters. Some of them come with enamel pins. Some of them come with stickers, just all kinds of cool stuff. They're pricey. Like the Night of the Demons set's like $170, but it comes with some cool stuff. I probably won't be buying that whole set just because, I want to continue to stay married and stuff. But I'll definitely be picking up some of the individual disc and just lots of good stuff. Lots of good stuff coming out there. If you're a horror fan, you're a physical media collector, there's so much. Every movie you loved growing up is getting a 4K release. So enjoy that.
Cool. All right, let's go over to our Patreon pit really quickly. We had a little Would You Rather. This week's Would You Rather is, would you rather give up air conditioning and heating for the rest of your life or give up the internet for the rest of your life?
Can we stop like with the, just like the saddest would you rathers?
Yeah, there's no death in this one. I tried to perk it up a little
bit. Would you rather get kicked in the dick or have a fucking stub your toe like every morning the rest of your life?
Well, a good would you rather needs to be like a scenario that like makes you try to really think about it.
So I'm struggling with this one.
This is easy. I'm struggling because
I live in the freaking South where it's been in the 90s all week, which doesn't sound that bad until you put 90% humidity on top of it. And it's terrible. My life is walking outside and immediately regretting it right now. Walking to the car, I'm covered in sweat from a 10-foot walk to my car. So air conditioning keeps me alive, but also my entire job and most of my friendships are internet based. So, you know, that's pretty important too. Both would suck to not have.
So what's your choice?
I guess I could get fans. And light a fire. Like, fuck, I'm going to have to go without air conditioning.
I have questions.
Yes.
Because it sucks. Being in Las Vegas, I have to go no internet because I would just die.
Yeah.
Can Jody come hang out at my house and I can use his phone as a hotspot? I think we have ways around this, Jason.
I mean, if I wanted to be like super strict, I would say you would never be able to use the internet. Not just you wouldn't have it at home, but you're giving up internet.
Now, on the plus side, it'd probably be okay for my mental health. When I don't hear the ramblings of stupid fucking morons. But yeah, dude, living in Las Vegas when it gets to 117 and with climate change, which these stupid people on the internet will tell you isn't real. Yeah, it's only going to get hotter. So I would just not be able to survive without air conditioning. So
yeah,
it's got to be easier.
I don't know that I could survive without AC, but again, my job And most of my relationships outside of my immediate family are all based online. So it would be good for my mental health to get away from, you know, the idiots on the internet. But I don't think it would be good for my mental health to suddenly be very isolated and poor.
Oh, no, it'd be terrible for me. But if I had no AC in the summertime, my dogs would probably die. And that's very important for my mental health. I'm just going to tell you guys, don't put all your mental health basket eggs in one basket like I have with my dogs. It's a good like 14 year plan, but it's my plan is to tell you the end.
I'll try not to tell your wife about that.
She knows. She has 100% like my mental health is tied to that goddamn dog.
Yeah. So Jason's would you rather this time is basically like, how would you destroy yourself? Would you like to destroy yourself physically or mentally? Take your pick.
Right. I mean, like 10 years ago, we could probably give up the internet, but like all three of our jobs are very internet dependent. Like all, pretty much our functioning on basic functions are all based around that. So,
yeah. But again, I need to be alive to perform my job and I wouldn't be alive if I didn't have air conditioning in the fucking desert of Las Vegas. I'd have to move. Like if I could move anywhere I wanted to first and then I could get rid of.
Okay, that does make
sense. I moved to the Bay Area, and you know, my rent would be I wouldn't because I couldn't afford rent there. So I
can't afford to live there.
Right. Interestingly, 100% of the people on our Patreon selected giving up the internet.
I think people don't put enough thought into that. I think they only think of the bad parts of the internet. There are lots of parts of the internet I would absolutely give up, but it's too good. Like, there's too much good that comes from it. I can't get rid of it. I like to be at home and do my job. I would like it less without air conditioning, but
I mean, realistically, I couldn't even go to my office and do my job without the internet if I couldn't use internet there. So
no internet, no job, no whole I live out here. Like, I'd have to like start, you know, doing physical labor of some sort. I don't want to do that shit. Like, I like sitting at my desk.
There are, you know, when I was growing up, I always thought, man, how nice would it be just to fucking like just do physical labor for a living. But then I realized, man, like it's kudos to all you people out there that do physical labor jobs, man, because it takes a toll on your body. And like, I have friends that train jujitsu that I got a couple of other iron workers. And I'm like, man, you guys are way more badass than I will ever be. Yeah, I don't know how you guys 100%. Do it.
No, I've had that thought too. You know, the desk the desk jockey's fantasy of being like, wouldn't it be nice if my job ended at 5 o'clock and I just spent all day lifting stuff and moving things? And then I think about how much I hate doing that. And no, I don't want to do that.
You know, I actually worked at UPS for like three months loading package cars, and I absolutely loved the work. The work was fun. It was cool. Like, cool, I need to fit 6,000 packages in these two cars here. I got it in numerical order. And that part was a fun part about it. It was the like, surprisingly, the most politicked job I've ever worked at. You think how much politics can go into working at UPS? Oh, all of them. Because if you're a driver or you load the cars, you're union. If you're a supervisor or above, you're non-union. So it's a constant battle between union and non-union trying to be pieces of shit to each other.
Yeah, I used to work in a stockroom. And like the stockroom part of things, totally fine. I had a terrible boss, though, and it ruined it for me.
So. It's amazing how a terrible boss can immediately make your job suck.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And then to wrap things up, we're going to do some dad advice. I have an announcement that I am getting my first tattoo in 1 week. And yes, it is going to be a
virgin. I don't know why that was like, I was like, ooh, what is it?
Yeah, you knew.
We've already talked about this.
I know.
It is going to be a version of the Crypt Keeper. Very excited, very nervous, but I think it'll be fun. So I asked Mondo to give me some advice on tattoo prep and tattoo aftercare, etc. So Mondo.
So the first thing we all tell Jason is make sure you eat a meal before you go in there. Very important before you go get a tattoo. And the Jason response is, do I look like I've ever missed a meal? Well done, sir. Well done. No, but for anybody out there thinking about getting a tattoo, first of all, that shit is legit forever unless you get it removed. Fun fact, getting a tattoo removed, which I've not done, my wife has, is like 10 times more painful than an actual tattoo.
That's what I've heard.
Like, I'm going to get this one on my left arm removed eventually because I got it when I was younger in a garage and I don't hate it, but that's like prime real estate. Now that I have this awesome artist, I want to get more stuff done in there. That's the other piece to it too, is like you have to make a choice. Are you going to have like little shit all over the place? Or are you going to have like pieces that are cohesive and go together? There's no right or wrong answer. There really isn't. Yeah. Like it's whatever you prefer. But if you're thinking about getting a tattoo, the most important thing I can tell you is also find an artist you jive with and whose work you like. It's in Vegas all the time. People see signs for $20 tattoo, home of $30 tattoo. Any tattoo artist that's at a shop tattooing for $20 most of them are not going to be good artists. It's kind of like, you know, if you know, your wife doesn't go to Supercuts for a haircut usually. Some people do, which is fine. But most people go to salons because they're more well-trained, right?
Sure.
And same thing with tattoo artists. A good tattoo artist is going to cost money. Jason, will you reveal what your tattoo artist is charging you? Did they already say?
Yeah, $200 an hour.
$200 an hour is a little bit steep. I shouldn't say that. Sorry, California. That's probably about right in California.
Yeah, it's about average for California.
Yeah, California. Out here in Vegas, a good artist will run you about 150 to 175.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you can talk to your artist and make sure you jive with them. Most are going to charge you deposit because they're going to draw something for you. They're going to spend time talking to you and they need to get paid for your time, just like anybody else needs to get paid for their time. That money always goes to the cost of the tattoo. I have heard of artists who will say that money is separate from the tattoo. That's a red flag.
Yeah.
Don't go that route. Also, don't just go giving your money to people on Instagram. There is a common thing where people, there's a common thing where people will like catfish. Well, they'll find an artist, copy all their artwork, post it up, and then say, DM me for booking. People DM for booking. They'll take the deposit and then run away. So that is silly. A thing there. It's okay to ask for references. It's okay to ask what shop they work in. Any good artist is going to have that just readily available, probably as an email template to shoot off to you.
Sure.
No big deal. But before you go for your first tattoo, make sure you're hydrated. Make sure you have some food in you because it's your body is reacting to trauma when this is happening. You are literally letting someone carve into your skin and your body's going to have a reaction to it. So you need to have food. You need to be hydrated or else your body can go into, I'm not trying to scare people saying go into shock. It can go into mild cases of shock or people have fainted from tattoos or whatnot. When you're in the tattoo, communicate to your tattoo artist. If you need to take a break, if you're not feeling well, they appreciate that. They rather you say, hey, I'm not feeling well. Maybe I need some water rather than you falling asleep and passing out on their chair and potentially, you know, them having to worry about your health. Mm-hmm. If you have any health issues, communicate those to your artist, communicate those to your doctor, and just make sure it's right for you to do, which usually it is. It's always workarounds for pretty much everything. Don't drink beforehand. A lot of people think they're going to get shit-faced and go get tattoo. A, most tattoo artists will not tattoo if you've been drinking because you're making bad decisions. But B, alcohol also thins your blood.
Right.
So you'll bleed all over the fucking place, and that's not good for anybody. And lastly, for aftercare, just listen to your artist. Every tattoo artist is going to have a little bit different way they tell you to do aftercare. Some like using the Saniderm, which is like the fake skin. Some artists like using, like mine prefers wet healing, which is very simply just washing it and keeping it clean using Dial soap. When I say Dial, like fragrance-free soap, dye-free soap, because again, you're cleaning a large open wound that you don't want to get shit in. And then using lotion every now and again. Also, a big common thing you see with people when they get their first tattoo is putting too much lotion on it. A thin layer of lotion, blot off the excess with a soft towel because you don't want to clog your pores. Because again, you have a wound that's trying to heal and needs oxygen to heal. And then, and the other thing that, and this is kind of a tough one, is like, especially if you get it like in a visible place, like your arm, you want to go show this sucker off, right? Keep it covered up. Keep it covered up for the first however long the artist tells you, because exposure to the sun and stuff like that can legit damage it. Mm-hmm. After the fact, guess what, Jason? On that calf, you put sunscreen on that calf. You don't want this work. You spent this cool thing you spent all this money on to get faded in the sun and all that stuff. And it's going to hurt. I'm not one of those guys that tells you, tattoos don't hurt. No, they hurt because you have someone taking a needle and stabbing into your body over and over and over again. So it's going to hurt. Just be prepared for that. Like, don't think it won't. Some artists will tell you you can use numbing creams. Those do exist out there. A lot of artists are not a fan of those because what can happen is your endorphins don't kick in the way they're supposed to. And then when the cream wears off, it suddenly everything hurts way more than it should. But I will say, I'm going to say it hurts. Don't get me wrong. Like, every tattoo I've gotten in here, like, if people haven't seen my tattoos, I'm going to take my shirt off mid episode here. You can see you can see my chest ones, my pinhead, my goat, my burning church in the middle. But that's a lot of hours of work, a shitload of hours of work there. And you will come to a point you're thinking, why the fuck am I doing this? like this is so stupid. Why am I letting this person do this to my body? And then the healing process can be a pain in the ass because it's going to get itchy. It's going to hurt. It's going to get annoying. Like, I couldn't, I'm a side sleeper and a chest sleeper. Guess what I couldn't do for every single one of these tattoos while they're healing. And then, and the one on my back, which you can kind of see, that sucked too, because I couldn't lay on my back or put my back. Like, I had to set my office chair sideways and all weird. So, there's pluses and minuses to everything. So I'm saying there are things you're going to go through in the healing process is not all roses, but the end result's fucking awesome and I think worth it. And especially when you're getting cool artwork put in your body, especially when it's by an artist that you like and respect and you trust. And I think that's some of the coolest things is that, like, I have art on my body that no one else will have. Obviously, anyone can have a pinhead, but like, this goat he designed, I can't, it's hard to, it's weird I'm looking at myself, but this goat he designed,
it's weird.
You know, custom for me. And like, I have a Beyond tattoo on my thigh, which I'm not going to get up and show you guys. I mean, I can, like, it's not like you can't. I don't know if you can see it without me having to, like, yeah, I'm not gonna show you. I just stand in my chair and pause, like, you'll see me fall over. It'll be like a Final Destination scene in my house, and then the next episode will be Jody and Jason deciding who's next and how do we, and Tony Todd will just pop up to give you guys the rules of death.
I mean, getting Tony Todd on our podcast would really be a good get. So
yeah, like, but I'm numbers. Down for that part, but he wouldn't really be Tony Todd. He'd be the mortician from Final Destination. So like,
sure.
And he'd be in character the whole time, and he would just pop, and you wouldn't invite him. He would just pop in, like, you'd just be chilling, like the Zoom would just pop up, and there's the mortician from Final Destination just
talking all mysterious the whole time, not really telling us anything, really, but cryptic. Kinda.
Yeah. But Jason, you're gonna have a great time with it. It's gonna be fine. Like, again, just Talk to your artist. Realistically, guys, all the advice I'm giving you is talk to your artist. Tell your artist, hey, I've never done this before. I have questions. And when you're done, if you have questions, ask questions, because they're more than happy to answer to you. And you're probably going to, Jason, I bet you're going to get their phone number and you're going to have their email or something like that.
Yeah, no, we were texting.
Yeah. If you have a question in 2 days, text them. They also have a vested interest in your tattoo coming out great, because they don't want you going to their shop and getting a tattoo and then not being happy with it. And then, like, what are you going to do? You're going to blast them on social media or whatever. It doesn't look good on them. They want your tattoo to look great. They want you to be happy with what you put in your body for the rest of your life.
All right.
So, well, if anybody's thinking about getting a tattoo, just I wouldn't just fucking go do it. Just Don't get something you think you're going to regret. And here's the other piece I'll tell you too, is like, for any youngsters listening out there, you're going to have your parents be like, man, don't get that tattoo. You'll regret it for the rest of your life. You know what? Like, I don't love this one on my arm here. I don't love that one I got, but you know what? Like, I know where I was when I got it. It's kind of, I know my mental state when I got it. I know where I was in life. It's kind of cool to look at that and remember that. And, yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, I think for a lot of people, tattoos are kind of like a story for them. I know they are for me in a way. Like, everything I have is something that kind of represents some piece of me. Yeah. The other one I can't show you is my Cobra Commander logo on my leg, which is that's what our gym used to use as one of our logos. So I got that when I got my blue belt in jiu-jitsu. And so I even though like I'll always have that memory, right? That memory will always be there every time I look at that. So you might get someone, you're 18 and you're 40, be like, oh man, maybe I should have gotten that. But fuck, dude, I remember getting this on a Thursday. I remember like my bathroom I got like right before I had my daughter, I think. Like, I always remember that the day I die. So there's nothing wrong with it, guys. Go have fun, especially if you're young. Like, fucking go do your shit. Like, have a good time.
Yeah, I don't have any, not because I have anything against them or I'm like, don't want them at some point. I just haven't found, you know, exactly the right fit for me at this point. But my brother is covered in them. He has tons of them. And it's exactly what you're saying. It's a story. Like, he can go through and be like, this one means this to me, and this one means this to me, and this one's important to me because of whatever. And so, like, he's got them all over and they all mean something to him. They're all, you know, part of his story. And that's awesome.
And they're fucking cool, let's be honest.
Absolutely. Cool. Yours are very cool.
What I will say is the one here in the middle. There we go. This fucking right here.
Sternum.
Yeah. That fucking sucked. Like, that was like, I took every other one like a champ. Like, when I was doing Pinhead, I had to keep my head like this for hours while he's doing all the little pins. And the pins in the collarbone and the shading here sucked. I'm not going to lie. Whatever, I stuck it out. That's not too bad. The one in the middle, that's the one where I was holding the table, and I hear the needle goes. I'd go, like, that was the one that was rough. And what will happen is your endorphins are going to kick when it first starts. It's going to hurt, and your body's going to be like, "What the fuck?" Then when your endorphins kick in, it'll be cool. You'll chill out. Your body relaxes. When you get big piece, what'll happen though, if you get a lot of work done in one day, by the end of the day, your endorphins are gone. And then it's just them shading over sore skin. It's like, but I wouldn't trade it for the world, man. Like, I love my tattoos. I love my artist. I've used the same artist for everything. If anybody's coming to Las Vegas and wants to get work done, I'll throw him out there. His name's Jason Paxman, Paxman. Just does some fantastic work. You can find him on Instagram, and I definitely like would recommend anybody going, unless you're a dick. If you're a dick, don't go see him. I don't want to recommend assholes to my tattoo artist. Well, if you're a jerk though, we've already you know, pushed you away with the left wing talk. But if you guys are in Vegas and want some tattoos, then hit him up. Tell him that Mondo sent you, and he won't give you a discount, but he'll say, oh cool. And I don't get a discount, man. I pay my tattoo artist full price because that's what he's worth. He's tattooed.
Do you tip
tattoo
artists?
Yes, you have. Yes, always tip your tattoo artist. Always tip your. I honestly do not know what the I just figure what he charged me and figure that's probably not enough and just give him what I think is enough. But and when I asked him, I said, Jason, like, I shouldn't probably say this on the air. I'm not going to talk about like my how I tip my tattoo artist, but I just know he's happy with my tips. I'll put it that way. Because I give him more than just a tip, obviously. It's also, he also gets my friendship and my companionship while I'm sitting at the table, because he's a friend of mine at this point, because we built that relationship over all the time. And it all started with this little moon he did for me.
Oh, nice.
And then Pinhead was one of his first portraits he did. But a great artist, and he's tattooed my wife at this point. He's tattooed my daughter. He's tattooed all three of my sister-in-laws. He's tattooed my mother-in-law. Wow. Like, he's tattooed like everyone in my cool. family. So
I like that.
It's really cool. But we got a little piece of Jason in us.
All right. Well, that wraps up another episode. Next week we'll be covering Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. We appreciate everyone for listening. We'd really appreciate it if you would give us a rating review on iTunes, a rating on Spotify, and check out our YouTube for videos of these podcasts. And with that, we thank you for listening to Dads from the Crypt.
Follow Dads from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch. But be careful what you ask for. You may get it.
Ha 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 ha.